The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
You know, I rarely listen to the intro just because it's so long and, you know, it's for compliance purposes. But I got laughing when I just heard, don't use this program as a way to avoid paying income taxes. And I thought maybe we should put the word evade in there. There's a big difference between avoiding and evading. Last time I checked, that was about 20 years. So we are here to discuss things that you need to take and use if you want. But obviously the disclaimer says that maybe shouldn't be the case. But whatever. We're going to have a great show today. I'm so excited. If you're listening on Saturday morning, 9 a.m., kickoff at noon for Michigan State. Homecoming, a lot of people in town. Very excited about that. I'm in charge of tailgate this weekend for our friend group. My wife and our friend Jenny will be hard at work putting breakfast casseroles together, as I believe we will set up around 9 o'clock. Kickoffs at noon, and then I think we have Big D's Barbecue coming in the afternoon. So if you're wandering around looking for a spot to stop and have a friendly atmosphere, I believe we are row 3, section or entry 9. Yeah, entry 9, row 3, spot 26. So if you're listening, write that down and stop by. Introduce yourself to me. I love meeting new people, and also get you a donut hole and a little breakfast casserole while you're there. Have some fun things coming up. Book signing. Sam Artery, local attorney, good friend, wrote the book Positively Conflicted. It's a really, really good book. And I'll tell you more about that maybe later. And of course, 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win, is my book. We are doing a joint book signing author discussion at Morgan Stern Books on October 26th, 5:30 in the evening. Should last about 45 minutes to an hour. And so it'll be a lot of fun. Hopefully we'll get a lot of new faces in Morgan Stern, and we will sell a few books. Of course, as you well know, all the proceeds of my book go to charity, and we typically send it to the charity of choice that month. So one month it was Big Brothers and Big Sisters. It was the Walk to End Alzheimer's. We've had Boys and Girls Club. A lot of different and very worthy charities to donate to, so we're happy to do that. All right, let's do a little news of the week, of course brought to you by Lance Lyke at the Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Lyke Law Group, 812-323-8300. And my good friend Dirk Bland at Kenny Bland Auctions and his beautiful wife Nikki, they are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Please visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And finally, Unrivaled Electric. They are your full-service electrical contractor. Yes, they specialize in generators and solar arrays, veteran-owned. They want to be your electrician like they are mine, 812-361-3604. Talk to Tim this week. He is extremely busy, but always welcoming new, friendly, and grateful customers. All right, let's do a little news of the week. 13 years ago this week, on Monday, October 13th, was the single best trading day in the S&P in the last 71 years. We actually had a gain of 11.58%. That was October of 08. What happened after that? Well, before that, things started to fall apart. Of course, the market was in crazy, crazy mode. So you have swings like that when you're in a very volatile market. The top 5% of U.S. households own 71% of U.S. equities, while the top 20% of households own 93% of all U.S. equities. That comes from the Survey of Consumer Finance. Here's the thing about that. When you look at consumption, it is driven by what your 401k looks like. If you're having a rotten year, you're probably not really excited about spending money. If you're having a great year, you might be more amped up to go buy a boat. So I can believe the fact that consumer spending, we have the necessity spending and discretionary spending, that when you have 20% of U.S. households owning 93% of U.S. equities, I certainly think that would be an indicator of what people are doing with their moolah. Inflation, the CPI, was reported this past Wednesday, and it was up 5.4%, a little higher than it was back in August, whenever it was announced to be 5.3%. We're going to talk more about that in the show when we hit Rod on in just a few minutes. Impacts what kind of products inflation? Well, oil prices, of course, they exclude the volatile, as they call it, energy and food from the typical CPI index. But you know what? That's the two things that I do the most, fill up my gas tank and eat. So I'm not so sure why they don't include it. But we've had oil prices. If you remember, May of 2020, it was almost negative. Well, it's all the way up to almost $80 a barrel. That's 64% year-to-date increase. Wow. The total net worth in America is up 47% in the last 4 years and up 89% in the last 8 years. So basically, our total net worth of the United States is $142 trillion. If you subtract the $30 trillion we have in debt, that means we're really worth $110 trillion. I like to look at it that way. House lawmakers introduced, this has been talked about quite a bit, and I have talked more about legislation being introduced this year than I normally do. I like to wait until it's actually law, but this has had some legs for a while. They've introduced legislation called Improving Medicare Coverage Act. It would actually lower the age of eligibility to 60 from the current age of 65. That change would expand Medicare to an estimated 23 million American seniors who currently are not eligible. Right now, Medicare provides coverage to 54 million people. Wow, if you have 360, 380 million people in America and you have almost 90 million of them on Medicare, that is a lot. I'm not saying it's good, bad, or indifferent, but what are some of the unintended consequences of that? I always like to consider those things, you know, and it happens all the time with every aspect of life. Well, I can tell you, we have people right now that are 63, 62, whatever, that are working for health insurance. And if you do this, be ready, because more people will retire and the labor force will get even tighter. Pensions, not many people have them anymore, but I found this interesting. The Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, the PBGC, has taken an average of 5.5 failed private pension funds each month over the past 5 fiscal years for a grand total of 336 failed plans. In this fiscal year, 2020 alone, 69 plans have failed of the current 57,000 that it covers. Well, why did they fail? Well, because they never planned for you to live until you're 90. That's just the bottom line. When they did the math, when they first opened these defined benefit plans, life expectancy probably wasn't, you know, 87 years old for someone over 65. It was probably much less than that. So they were grossly underfunded. Businesses change, and they go bankrupt. And I can tell you, people that have pension plans still, they complain like no other of paying those premiums to the PBGC, but they have no choice in most cases. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, the International Monetary Fund cuts growth forecasts and, oh, wow, warns about inflation. We'll be right back to talk about that and a bunch of other stuff. We'll get Rod on the phone in a couple segments. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, the Wall Street Journal is my favorite newspaper. I read it every single day. I don't read every article, but I read many, many of them. I usually grab it early in the morning, knock out a couple of the important ones, try to take it home at night and knock out the others if I have time. But front page, this past Wednesday, the IMF, International Monetary Fund, cuts growth forecast, warns on inflation. Supply chain disruptions, global health concerns spurred the IMF to lower its 2021 growth forecast for the world economy, while the group raised its inflation outlook and warned of the risk of higher prices. Policy choices have become more difficult with limited room to maneuver, the IMF economist said in a report which is released twice a year, along with two additional updates. In raising its inflation outlook, the group urged policymakers to stand ready to take swift action if the recovery strengthens more quickly than expected or inflation risk become more pronounced. Prices on food, medicine, to vehicles have risen worldwide, threatening the global recovery after the pandemic wiped out many businesses and jobs. The IMF cut its global growth forecast for 2021 from the 6% that it had back in July down to 5.2. Not monster, but still pretty significant. The reduction mostly reflected problems with the global supply chain that caused a mismatch between supply and demand. In today's Wall Street Journal, they talk about the LA port goes to 24/7 to ease the snarl, which is the big backlog of shipping containers. I saw where many companies, big companies, are chartering their own boats to get their goods and services to the U.S. So that supply chain, whether or not that helps or not, I don't know, because you still have to coordinate truckers and get everybody on board to do what they need to do to get those ships unloaded and goods supplied all around the country. I saw where that particular port supplied something like, don't hold me to this, like 70% of all of the goods around the U.S. So that's a big problem. The IMF maintains its view, and now this is one I will argue slightly, that inflation will return to pre-pandemic levels by mid-2022. It also warns that the negative impact of inflation could grow further if the pandemic-related supply chain disruptions turn to be out more damaging and long-lasting than first thought. That could result in earlier tightening of monetary policy by central banks, holding back the recovery. They also said that inflation outlook is highly uncertain, at least they're admitting it, because of the unprecedented nature of the current recovery. The forecast, as I look through the article here, hit some highlights. For inflation to return to pre-pandemic levels is based on an ample labor supply, and that should help weigh on wages. So we'll see about that. I sure hope so. Geez. I mean, everywhere you go, Misty was at the sandwich place over here. You know what I'm talking about. I never go there. Not what is that place out by the mall?
Panera?
Is it Panera? Mm-hmm. Panera. Thank you for that. I kept wanting to call it something different. Closed. Only online ordering available. You know, then she goes somewhere else. Closed because of the lack of staffing. It was the pharmacy, I believe, at Target. So just, it's a problem. It's a big problem. The supply shortage caused by the logistical bottlenecks, in the article it says, combined with the stimulus-fed consumer appetite for goods, has caused rapid increases in consumer prices in the U.S., Germany, and many other nations around the globe. The IMF Food and Beverage Index rose 11% between February and August, with prices of meat and coffee up 30%. While monetary policy can generally look through transitory increases in inflation, central banks should be prepared to act quickly if the risk of rising inflation expectations become more material in this uncharted recovery. Straight from the IMF. So, what do you do, right? What do you do when inflation hits? We're feeling it now. Well, we've been there before. It's been a long time. Right, you go back into the 70s and early 80s, we had inflation running rampant. The Fed did exactly the opposite of what they would be doing in today's world because they know that you don't want to repeat bad mistakes. But what do you buy? Like, what kind of things will help you? And how can you look at things differently and maybe not immediately believe inflation is bad? Because inflation is okay as long as you don't have tons of it for very long. But we all need inflation. So when we come back, we're going to talk about, what do you do? What do you own when inflation finally hits here, right, or globally? We'll be right back. Talk about that and more. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Rod Holloway is joining me now on the phone. And Rod, before you came on, I talked about how the International Monetary Fund cut its growth forecast, warns about inflation, is telling central banks around the globe, be ready. Be ready to act and be ready to act quickly. And, of course, no one wants to hear that. And I saw that the L.A. port is now going to a 24/7 to try to ease the snarl of the 3 to 4 week lag it takes to get a ship unloaded. And they supply, I was trying to find it in the article, you might have picked it up in today's Wall Street Journal, that it's something like 70% of goods or something come through those two ports out there to, that feed the United States. So it's really important, but just because they're going to 24/7, logistically, they still have to have truckers, they still have to have workers. You can say, I'm open, but just as we were talking before you came on, Panera Bread. Misty went there the other day to get something to eat. Lobby closed. Can't drive. No drive-through. Just order online and basically like I carry out only. Taco Bell on the south side. I don't eat there often, but when I do, I think the lobby's still closed. So you know, there's not a lot of workers. But the supply chain is definitely the major source of inflationary concerns right now. And of course, the IMF and everyone else believes that to be a short-term thing and transitory in nature. But I'm not going to talk about that any longer. What do you do when inflation hits? That's the conversation of this particular topic. And it's been so long since we've had to even deal with inflation. There are times in the last 20 years we've fought deflation at times. It was back in the 70s and early 80s, but it freaks everyone out. And some inflation is good inflation. I mean, you have to have inflation to have asset growth. And that's what I want to talk to you about, Rod, is how to keep people from freaking out about inflation, and oh my gosh, you know, this is going to happen, and when this happens, that happens. The fact is, what do you want to own when inflation hits? Generally, you want to own assets, you know, hard assets, real estate, stocks, things like that, because when inflation is here, things like that go up. Now, you're going to have some short-term disruptions when the inflation hits and the Fed starts tightening. Sure, you're going to see, as you put it, I'm trying to stumble over my words here just a little bit, but you know what I'm trying to say. That's your term, not mine.
Yeah. The key with the inflation is at what level. So what we know is that the Fed historically has always wanted to see inflation running at about 2%. They feel as though that's a good level that provides what you're talking about, Dave, which the good aspects of inflation. That allows people to get pay raises because it allows companies to slowly increase their prices as some of the input costs increase slightly. But at the same time, hopefully pay is going up because of that inflation and that everyone's still kind of equal, that you're not losing purchasing power because your pay is going up slower than the inflation. Part of the problem and the reason that this Fed came in and changed that was anytime we approached 2% inflation in the past, the Fed began to tighten to get ahead of it. And what they did is they cut it off. So it never exceeded 2%, meaning that it also never got to a 2%. So this Fed came in and said, you know what? We have run under 2 for years, if not decades. We got to stop focusing on getting to 2 and trying to cut it off as soon as it approaches the level of 2. What we really need is an average of 2. So they have said they're going to let it run hot. They're going to get it over that 2% to get the overall average to 2 because we've been under 2 for so long. The fear and where inflation is justifiably fearful is when that inflation begins to exceed that 2% number and it stays there. It's not like we just had a reading of 5.4 on a year-over-year comparison. So the month was a 0.4 increase from last month, but on last year versus this year comparison, it was a 5.4%. You don't want to get into that and consistently stay there. We can take a few months of that as the so-called transitory story has been told, and if it truly is transitory and begins to subside and you work your way back down to something more reasonable, closer to that 2%, slightly above, like I said, they want to get an average of 2. Well, to get an average, if you've been below 2 for a long time, you got to be over 2 for a while to actually get the average. But when you begin to get into those high numbers, that's when you start having erosion into purchasing power. You begin to have people's buying habits changed. We see that most certainly in the gasoline market, in that area, in which you hit a certain level and people begin to refrain from filling up their vehicles, which means they're also refraining from taking part in activities within the economy, whether it's travel, whether it's going shopping or whatever it is. If they're not willing to put money in the gas or to fill the gas tank up, it takes those spending dollars away, then they're not out there consuming. So it is a fine line. So no, in general, don't be afraid of inflation. We want inflation more than we want deflation. We just want inflation to not be running out of control or at such a high level that it begins to really erode our purchasing power because our pay increases aren't keeping up with the inflation.
Yeah, and the pay increases happen slowly and price movements can happen quickly. So you may have increase of the gas pump. I just filled up, and honestly, I hadn't filled up for a long time. I'm not sure what I've been doing, but I went to the, it was like $3.47 a gallon, and I thought, geez. So I was in a hurry, and that's why I cut the pump off at $30. It wasn't so much I didn't want to put it in, but I do know that I remember a day where I'd play the game. You know what? I'm only going to put what I need today in, hoping that prices will come down tomorrow. Of course, that's like playing with fire because prices could go up as well. But it's almost like in India where they had that inflation for a while. I haven't tracked it recently, where they would pay people every day. So they could go out and buy something that day because the prices would go up the next day so much that the money they made at the end of the week wouldn't buy as much stuff. That's the problem right there, and that's what we don't want to get
right
into. Here's another thing that you don't want to own. What's bad to own during inflation? Well, anything that has a fixed coupon, like a bond or a CD, anything with a fixed low rate puts you into a negative real return. But here's something I want people to think about. A mortgage. This is making inflation work for you, not against you. Let's start with your mortgage payment. Let's say you have a $300,000 mortgage and you're paying it off on a 30-year note. So your principal and interest right now with these interest rates is about $1,300 a month. If you have 3.5% inflation, by the time you get to the last couple of years of your mortgage, it will feel like a $480 payment in today's dollars. And while your house should be increasing in value, probably another couple hundred on top of that. So you can have inflation working for you, not against you. And Rod, that's a good example of it. And I know for people that have been in their house a really long time, and maybe they've been paying, they didn't refinance to take a bunch of cash out, they may be paying a few hundred dollars a month on a mortgage that they started 28 years ago. And that's certainly making inflation work for you, not against you.
Yeah, it most certainly is. And it's the same thing with what we've been seeing here on the wage side of things. People are getting more pay. They're getting offered bonuses to take on new jobs, things like that. So yes, there are positive aspects that go along with inflation, which is exactly to your point of saying, don't be fearful of inflation in general. Inflation is okay, and it has positive aspects to it. Hey, the Social Security collectors out there should be fairly happy with the inflation because
5.9.
They're getting ready to get a pretty strong cost of living adjustment due to inflation running hotter than what it typically has. So there's no complaints there amongst the Social Security crowd. But the same time is they went a long period of time with very, very small increases because inflation was running so low that cost of living adjustment to the Social Security system was very minuscule and far between. So it's kind of playing catch up for all those years of us trending below 2% so consistently.
Well, the good news is William Shatner made it to space and back safely. I saw that in the Wall Street Journal as well, so that's kind of cool. 90 years old. Did you see his picture on the front page? Man, he looks good for 90.
That's it. That's what I watched a little bit. I watched the takeoff and I watched the landing, and that was exactly what I was thinking. So, number one, here you got Captain Kirk, who is now an official astronaut because of this space trip up into space and back down. But secondarily, the thing that many of the journalists covering that mentioned, and it hit me as well, was 90 years old. He seemed to have no issues climbing up and up into the rocket, out of the rocket, standing there. I mean, he wasn't getting any help or nothing. So that is a 90-year-old who appears to be very fit, still has his mental capacity about him because they interviewed him and listening to him talk about the thrill he had in being up there was quite amazing. So I don't know what has done it for Captain Kirk and William Shatner, good clean living or whatever it is, but golly, if I make it to 90, I hope that I'm in the same physical and mental condition that he is.
I played golf one time with Coach Heppner, and I had this really long putt, and I stand back and I putt it, and it goes in, and we're in a scramble, He said, man, that's great. He said, let's chalk that one up to good, clean living. And I said, and an occasional bad thought. And he laughed. And then I heard him speak at an event once, and he said something about, yeah, I'll chalk that up to good, clean living, but an occasional bad thought. So let's talk about Captain Kirk in a positive way, but understand, folks, that just like he, hey, if you're a 65-year-old married couple, there's a 92% chance one of you cats are going to make it to 98. So you got to plan for a really long and hopefully great retirement. Rod, thanks for your time as always. I'll let you go, and I'll see you back at the ranch.
You bet. And as Captain Kirk would say, live long and prosper, Dave. Have a wonderful show.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, thinking about setting up a retirement account as a business owner, some top reasons small business owners should. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Taper tantrum. That's what I was trying to say. Rod never did bail me out of that one. Taper tantrum. That means when the Fed starts tapering, the market will have a temper. Yeah, they'll just go, it'll go crazy. Even when they talk about it, it goes crazy. All right, thinking about setting up a retirement account as a business owner, some top reasons that you should think about it. One is, I think many of these guys and gals think of it as being super complex, super expensive, but it doesn't have to be. There's so many different types of retirement plans, whether you're self-employed, it's just you and your spouse, or whether you have 10 or 50 employees, it can be very, very easy. One of my favorites is the solo 401k. You know, you're employed, maybe your wife works with you, you can sock away a ton of money in those 401ks. I mean, well over $50,000 in most cases. The traditional 401ks, they're a little more complex. That's when you have employees, you have matches you have to put in, and you have all kinds of record keeping, and yeah, that can be a little bit expensive. But there's simple IRAs in 401ks. There's SEPs. There are the small business owner 401k, SBOs they call them, and that's lesser of 100% of employees' compensation or a certain part of their compensation you put in. 25% of people have to be eligible. So there's all kinds of rules out there that you have to sort of say, okay, which one fits me the best? But I think in this environment, and Rod mentioned before, it's hard to find people. And if you're getting ready to hire someone and they're looking at you versus another roofing shop and you have a 401k or a retirement plan of some type, you have a little bit of health insurance and the other one does not, guess who I'm likely going to pick? It's a great recruitment and retainment tool. Now, you have Roths. If you want to just set up a traditional IRA or Roth IRA, you can do that. Payroll deduction. No requirement by the employer. Just, hey, I'm offering this as an option for you. Out of sight, out of mind. Set it up to be automatic. So I think it's fantastic when a small business owner sets up a retirement account because, unfortunately, many of them don't. Most of them don't have anything. When you look at the statistics around the nation, it's alarming how many people don't have access to a company retirement plan. And there's really no reason for it because even as a business owner myself, we've had a simple IRA plan available. But now as we've all gotten older and balances have gotten larger, we're moving into more of a traditional 401k. There was not a big reason back in the day for us to have a retirement account that allowed people to put $25,000 in. This was, you know, many years ago. With, you know, 19,000 plus the catch-ups and plus all that. But now we're all over 50. Most of us are. And now it might make sense to do a 401k. So, yeah, it's something you can change over time. You can even put a defined benefit plan in. If you're a medical office, let's say, and you are the dentist or you're the doctor and you're the oldest one in the group and you have a bunch of young people working for you, you could set up a defined benefit, a pension plan, and generally cram hundreds of thousands of dollars into that and creating a retirement income for yourself, and it's all based on age. If I'm trying to guarantee an income for a 60-year-old in 5 years versus a 30-year-old in 35 years, guess what? My commitment's a lot greater to the older person, which happens to be me, right, as the owner. So I think that you should. Now, here's something I wanted to share that I just thought was sort of creative, and this isn't anything you have to do, you know, within the rules of the federal government or ERISA or anything like that. But I had a friend of mine owns a company and was really wanting to figure out a way to bonus one of his top employees and keep him. So we talked about, you know, just giving him money along the way, and he thought, well, that's not really doing what I want it to do. I want him to be incentivized to stick around for 5 or 10 years. So we came up with an idea that he would put money away every year for this particular employee, and he would sign an agreement and show proof of funds that he was doing it, that in 5 years, he would put enough money away, it was $10,000 a year, to give him $50,000 cash. And if he stayed for 10 years, it would be something like $125,000 of cash. And the only thing they did, only thing he did was took the money every month, stuck it into an account, and he gave this person a signed contract that said, this is what I'm going to do for you. And then he also had the ability to show him proof of funds if he wanted it. I'll show you where I had the money, and here it is, and why it's designated for you. And guess what? It worked. We're about 4 years into this deal, and he told me at dinner, that's one of the best things you've ever suggested I do, is to put money away for this guy, because he's super excited about next year when that big check's coming, and he's working hard. And once again, the other side of that was then we tied it to sales. So if he had more sales, more money went in, but it was kind of like deferred comp without actually having a real deferred comp plan in. You just have to be creative and come up with ideas to handle the situations that come up. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, this is just something I found interesting. I found this piece actually came from a pretty big company that we do some business with on retirement methodology. Moneyball or Monte Carlo? Of course, Moneyball, The Art of Winning an Unfair Game. It was a huge success, well documented in Michael Lewis's book, Moneyball. And then Monte Carlo, which is basically saying, what's the probability of you having a successful outcome with your retirement? I'm not going to spend a ton of time on that, but it does get into some of the most important goals that people have. And then also, it gets into the discussion of longevity. So all things that are close and dear to me. I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Back in the early 2000s, the Oakland Athletics baseball team made a bold change to their scouting practices. Their goals were to improve the team by identifying undervalued players using statistical measures over traditional subjective analysis. The journey, of course, was well documented in Michael Lewis's book, Moneyball, The Art of Winning an Unfair Game. In our world, Monte Carlo analysis evolved as a workable planning approach. It had a singular focus on probabilities of success and failure, often ignoring people's perception of retirement planning success. And that's why I've never been a huge fan of Monte Carlo, because it does ignore all of this. It looks beyond, looking beyond the probabilities based on worries about losing money or not having enough to live on, and delivering strategies based on big picture thinking may help you hit the ball out of the park in retirement planning and not worry so much. Next week, I'll have Jim Sherman on. Jim, a 50-year employee of Indiana University, psychology guy, former city council member. He's going to be talking about psychology of retirement. It's going to be a great show. And why do I know that? Because I pre-recorded it, as I'm going to be out of town next week, and that show will run. So look forward to it. It was a fantastic show. We had a great time, and I'm promising you will love it. So when you look at the most important goals that people have, this is a survey of over like 100,000 people back in 2017. Not having enough money to last your lifetime has always been number one. 33% of people said that was most important. Only 16 said it was third most important. They only had three categories, either yes, number two, number three. Remain financially independent was actually number two. Stay and live in your own home, three. But then when you get into spend time traveling, having enough money for medical expenses, it starts to change. Having enough time for travel, only 7% found that most important. 15%, it was the third most important thing. I found this interesting. Having money to pay medical expenses, only 4% of people felt like that was a concern. 13 said, yeah, it's third most important thing on my list. You get all the way down to having enough money for emergencies, pursuing hobbies, maintaining control of assets. Really wasn't that important. I found that interesting, because most people have this idea that if I lose control, and what do I mean by losing control? Potentially turning money over to an insurance company, for a guaranteed lifetime income. That's losing control. Maybe it's transferring money into a trust, an irrevocable trust. And then last on the list was leaving money to their heirs or charities. Now, remember, these are baby boomers between the ages of 50 and 75 with household investments of like $500,000 or more. So leaving money to the heirs or charity was last on the list. Having enough money to last their lifetime was number one on their list, and everything else in between. I find it interesting because when you look at the demographics, yes, baby boomers are less interested in leaving money behind to their kids. Their parents, that was like very top of the list. One of the main things they wanted to do was say, hey, I grew up really poor. Maybe they were a depression kid. And I want to make sure I leave money to my kids. So the baby boomers are different. I'm not so sure about my generation. I'm thinking that we're probably a little more baby boom minded, where, yeah, if we leave something, fine. If we don't, that's okay too. But I'm not going to sacrifice my life, my habits, my hobbies, my travel, my everything to make sure that I leave a big old pile of cash behind. So that was pretty interesting stuff from this study that I saw. Let's see, and lastly was the discussion on retirement worry inventory and then also addressing longevity risk. So that was the number one thing I picked up, was that people, they think of longevity risk as simply living too long and running out of money. But as we've said on the show, with the help of our friend Tom Hegna, I wrote about it in the book, longevity risk is the great risk multiplier. It is the largest risk we have, because it's not just about living too long and running out of money. When you live a 30 to 40 year retirement, a lot of things can happen. A lot of good things can happen, and a lot of bad things can happen. You have a bigger chance that we'll have another major market correction, inflation eroding your purchasing power, tax increases decimating your IRAs and 401ks, maybe a healthcare concern that will wipe out your life savings. Lots of things can happen when you think about longevity. So when you address longevity risk, all of those ancillary risks need to be addressed. Not just, oh, longevity means I'm going to live a long time, therefore I need enough money that I won't outlive it. It's all these other things that can happen as well. So it was just a really cool reinforcing article, piece, white paper, whatever you want to call it, on the retirement methodology, Moneyball or Monte Carlo. And I like to go with my money ball. Maybe that's the art of winning an unfair game. Isn't that the way we feel sometimes? How do I win this unfair game when it comes to retirement and all the decisions we have to make and how we have to stay on top of things throughout our retirement career? Yeah, we're going to have Jim Sherman on next week. You'll really enjoy that program as we go through a lot of the psychology of retirement, and we'll have a lot of fun too. We're going to take a quick break, come back, wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Hope you enjoyed today's program. We're all over the board. I have some good guests lined up for this fall. In fact, I had one lined up for today that could not make it at the last moment, so we sort of pivoted and went a little different direction. But man, there's so much to talk about. I could fill up hours and hours of talking about current events, where we're headed with things. If you don't believe that, maybe we look back in the past and see that. If you don't know history, it seemed to repeat it. I could talk for hours and hours and hours. Still have not launched my podcast, although I'm getting closer as I'm gaining advice and getting advice from many, many people on how to have a successful podcast, working out some compliance issues as well. Hey, if you're listening to this show, then you are still eligible to sign up for Retirement Planning Today. The class offered through the Center for Lifelong Learning at IV Tech. Maybe you have a invitation, brochure, whatever you want to call it, sitting on your table at home, and you've been wanting to sign it, but just haven't quite done it yet. Tuesday, October 19th and the 26th, those are your two evening classes live at IV Tech, and then you have an online version as well. You can do on Wednesday, starting October 20th and wrapping up on the 27th. It's a really great class. It's taught by Doug Hughes from my office. I will do a little bit on taxes in retirement, a little preview of a invitation to a new class that will be introduced at Ivy Tech, probably in early spring. Taxes in Retirement 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win. That is an entire course on its own. That's about a two-hour course versus this one. You'll go 2.5 hours for two nights, so that's 5 hours of your life. But when you look at planning vacations. My wife has been spending tons of time planning a vacation to Disney World with my son. His 21st birthday is on December 9th, and I get to take him places, and he likes going places with us still, which is kind of cool. But Mom wanted to take him on her own trip, so they're going to go to Disney. She's been planning things. She got up at 5:30 this morning simply to try and make reservations for restaurants because she was told that if she got up at 5:30, they opened things up at 5:45 this many days before your trip. Well, my point is most people spend more time doing that kind of stuff than they ever do planning their retirement. So please take the 5 hours out of your life over two evenings and come join my friend Doug Hughes and learn how to do all the things to have a very successful retirement. Also coming up is our book signing at Morgan Stern Books here in Bloomington on Auto Mall Road. I'll be sharing the stage with my good friend and local attorney, Sam Ardery, who wrote the book Positively Conflicted. It's a great book, how to change your mindset when it comes to conflict and how to turn it into a positive thing. It invites us to reexamine our instinctive and often destructive reactions to conflict. It's a really good book. If you haven't had a chance to pick it up, please do. But buy it through Morgan Stern Books. Sam and I will be there having an author discussion, talking about the importance of why this topic, for me, The Final Drive, and for Sam, Positively Conflicted, as a mediator and attorney, how he's able to flip that around. And it's great. So if you have time, come on out on October 26th at 5:30 in the evening. Should last about an hour at best. Morgan Stern Books and on Auto Mall Road. And if you didn't catch this show on the Thursday night time slot, hopefully you're listening on Saturday morning, 9 a.m., right before kickoff, Indiana-Michigan State homecoming here at Memorial Stadium. Very excited. I am in charge of our tailgate, so if you'd like to stop by, please do so. Come on by. We are in Gate 9, Row 3, Spot 20-something. And I don't know, we're going to have all kinds of great food, and it's a friendly environment. So if you're out wandering around, please stop by. I love meeting new people, as I say every time we tailgate. So hope you enjoyed the show. I'll be back again next week with the show with Jim Sherman on the psychology of retirement. And then I'll be back live again the following week. Hope you enjoyed it, everyone. Go Hoosiers. Bye-bye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.